Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 175, recorded on April 10th, 2013. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as always, is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Absorber. Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
Oh, you made me snort. Well done. It's going fine, and as always, I'm amazed that the bits can make it up the mountain to my computer, and that
back down
from the microphone back to you.
Yeah. Awesome, Adam Christensen's here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how's it going?
Good. I think you just said awesome, Adam Christensen, so thank you.
That's what I meant. So, there you go. Today, what are we talking about?
I don't know. What's going on?
Okay, the first
Not
thing I'm
much gonna... is the thing. Like, this has been, I mentioned this on my show, this has been like the slowest first quarter for like Apple stuff ever.
Yeah, that's
true. And
it
doesn't look like it's going to improve, which is the really frustrating part.
They usually have some announcements like pre-spring.
Right.
Or right, like very, very early spring.
Like now. There
like
should be
right
stuff.
Now. Sure, yeah. Man, I remember the good old days when they had the iOS roadmap announcements in March. Do you remember that? They did like two different years where they did that.
Mm-hmm.
That was nice.
Good times.
Knew what to expect for WWDC. But we do have one interesting thing. This is kind of from last week, but we didn't cover it. The fact that U.S. federal law enforcement says that it's impossible to wiretap iMessage.
Now, is
fake,
that really
fake,
true?
Fake.
Yeah.
Okay. They would say
By
that
the way,
just...
it's been a long time since I've had to use that line.
Yeah, so they just say that. They say, hey, guys, in case you want to do something illegal, it's impossible for us to wiretap iMessage.
Okay, here's the deal. What they mean is that they can't go through your cell service carrier to get your iMessages. So because
the back door
route
is closed.
Through
because
their servers.
Yeah.
Okay, because they're not using the AT&T back door that they have, and Apple hasn't provided them a back door.
Right. Now, if law enforcement needs the history from your iMessage conversations, they can totally get that. What they have to do is subpoena that information, and then Apple will be legally bound to turn that information over.
So basically, they have to do it the right way, not the covert government conspiracy
exactly.
theory way.
Okay, so they can't intercept iMessages between two Apple devices, but if they go to Apple and say, hey, can we get the history?
They can
Apple's going to say, no, go get a subpoena.
Right.
Exactly.
And then they'll give it to them.
Right. So, yeah, so that was totally sensationalized and taken out of context as well.
I like sensational material.
Well, who doesn't?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, but I think the point is right, though. It's pretty well known that there's, I guess I shouldn't say pretty well known. It's my understanding from a lot of very smart people that, you know, with the cell companies and the phone companies, there's been arrangements for years where they can more easily get at this data, I guess.
Oh,
if
totally.
They need to.
Yeah, there are mm-hmm. there's backdoors in almost everything. It's built in there for that purpose. It's in there for certainly in AT&T servers.
Yeah. I mean, I don't fall into all that, you know, conspiracy theory talk and stuff.
I don't think
like
it's
that.
Even conspiracy. I think it's just known.
Just
yeah, it's not conspiracy. It's just business as usual.
Yeah.
And and a lot of companies that hold private data are a little fast and loose with the way they protect it when the government's involved. And you know, it's the protections are there to make sure that we have our privacy. So it's unfortunate that companies will hand over that private information without a subpoena or a warrant. And yes, I understand that that if they do a little bit to help out government agencies are more likely to do a little to help them out. But that's not how it should be.
Yeah. So well, there's always Stu in IT who the government can slip, you know, $10K and say, hey, it wouldn't be unfortunate if a copy of the database somehow fell out of the server.
Fell out.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's great all the way up until Joe's attorney realizes who Stu in IT is and manages to put the trail back together and says, oh, fruit of the poisonous tree, can't use the evidence. And they can't.
Isn't the golden rule don't get caught?
That is.
The golden rule is don't get caught. You are absolutely right.
Yep.
And all will be fine.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So we should probably talk about AppGratis.
No. Oh. AppGratis.
Yes. So last week, right? Or this week. Yeah, AppGratis, an app that, if you don't know, provides the lovely service of giving you an app a day that's usually either free or highly discounted. A lot of people on Appler enjoy that. I haven't actually used it myself, but they're a fairly large company. They've gotten a lot of funding. I think they got something around like $13 million in funding, maybe even more. But Apple decided to pull them from the App Store on Monday. And there was quite a bit of speculation initially as to why Apple decided to pull them, because they've been around for quite a while. And I'm not sure that the pull was necessarily related to a very specific app update, as that sort of goes sometimes when an app changes in the way that it works and they decide to not approve it. I believe they were actually pulled, not just having an update rejected. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, that is correct.
So, yep. The speculation was that it was because Apple didn't want, there are rules in, as of the iOS 6 update that, says that, apps that display apps other than your own for purchase or promotion in a manner similar to, or confusing with the App Store will be rejected, as well as, the guideline that keeps, developers from using push notifications to send advertising or promotions or direct marketing. And so, of course, that is the problem with AppGratis. And there have been a number of other app discovery apps that have also been pulled, such as App Shoppers app was pulled in December. And so it does seem that Apple is getting rid of app discovery apps from the App Store.
Yes, and it makes sense because those apps violate Apple's terms and conditions. And what here's what the big problem is. The AppGratis guys thought because Apple hadn't blocked every app that was doing that, that Apple was, in essence, endorsing the act and saying it's okay. It's not a violation of our rules. Well, it is a violation of the rules. And Apple's finally getting around to enforcing that one. And so AppGratis got pulled. And it's a multi-part problem. The first part of the problem is that we have developers that are writing code that goes outside of the restrictions Apple puts on those developers. And it's getting approved in the App Store. And they think, well, because it got approved, that means it's okay. That's problem number one. Because, no, it's not okay. The rules say it's not. Problem two is that Apple isn't blocking these applications when they come in. And so that so now we have this problem where apps are getting through that actually shouldn't, regardless of how well written they are, they shouldn't because they violate the guidelines. And so we have this inconsistency issue, and then later on Apple catches up and starts bumping the apps out. So the problem comes from both ends.
Yeah, and I think the bigger problem from a developer's perspective is that, as we've known since the very beginning, all of these rules are very non-specific and very much open to general interpretation. And so who is the gatekeeper that gets to decide what the interpretation of the rule is? And specifically with the one that I think this was pulled for, it's like guideline 2.25, if anybody wants to go look up the specific one. But in essence, it says that apps that display apps other than your own for purchase or promotion in a manner similar to or confusing with the App Store will be rejected. So I initially thought, because I even texted you earlier today, Michael, about this in relation to, you know, Appler. If you were ever going to do an Appler, you know, iOS app, this seemed to be something that would rule this out. But what I had read when I was reading the blogs was just, the rule is that if your app promotes other apps, it can't be in the App Store. Well, no, in reading the full thing, it's only a problem, I guess, if you do it in a manner similar to or confusing with the App Store. Well, who gets to decide that?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what in App Gratis makes it more confusing than some other app? So, like, if they, you know, had it come up in a pop-up with a rainbow background and, you know, stars around the button, it would be okay because it would be ugly and it wouldn't match how the App Store presents an app, right?
Right. But on the flip side, if it looks nice, then it looks too much like the App Store.
I don't know. I mean, is that how do they go? This could be confused with the App Store app, okay. Right?
Yeah.
Well, who gets to decide that?
Yeah, and this is the age-old problem of the App Store. And one of the things that I read was a quote from the head of the company of App Gratis saying that, you know, how can you just arbitrarily take down our application? You've approved many versions of it, and you're not even telling me why exactly you're doing this. And I've got a company of 45 people that this is supporting, and you're just not really caring about the situation enough to give a lot of information as to why it wasn't approved.
Welcome to Apple.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's terrible. Yeah. Welcome to Apple. But at the same time, yeah, Apple wants to have all this control over their ecosystem that ostensibly provides a very stable and beautiful and useful ecosystem. But at the same time, what they're doing is harming the exact people that help them sustain this ecosystem.
Yeah, it's asinine. Sorry.
It's Apple. It's how they do it. It's crazy. The system is not designed to work for developers.
They got it. I mean, that
they really have to. Absolutely.
This is a
systemic
problem.
We've been seeing this for years.
Right?
Yeah. I don't see it getting fixed. And I hope I'm wrong, but I mean, how long have people been clamoring for demo versions of app and for
upgrades.
Ways to be able to do upgrades? Yeah, and that's not the Apple way.
I really feel that in iOS 7, they have to provide updates. Or
oh, Michael, you're so pretty.
Paid updates and as well as trial versions of applications. If they don't,
people will continue to buy just like they are, and developers and some users will continue to bitch just as they do, and the App Store will still be ridiculously successful, and that's
yeah, but why do programs like App Gratis and App Shopper and Appler and all these other things, why do they exist? It's because there is a problem. There's a need that needs to be filled that the App Store currently does not.
Right.
And either they need to get their stuff together and make some changes and make it a better experience, or developers are eventually going to be more and more upset, and more of them are going to start developing for Android first or Android only.
No, they're not.
You would almost have me if it weren't for the classic vetting mechanism that, you know, I always use, which is follow the money.
Exactly.
Where is the money? So right now, no. If Apple's fortunes change and the money isn't following Apple like it is now, then that's when we'll see Apple address these issues. But, you know, barring that happening, they can pretty much ignore this because developers are going to suck. I don't agree with the thinking or the philosophy, but I understand it
at the same time.
They're going to suck it up and they're going to put their apps on the App Store first. When you read stats like came out last week, was it Flurry who came out and said, you know, 75% of the revenue from apps is flowing through Apple's App Store and like only 22% is flowing through Amazon. So if I'm a developer, even with all of the BS that I have to deal with Apple, all of this kind of crap, I'm going to suck it up and do it because that's where I'm going to make the most money. End of story.
Right. And that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
But
unfortunately, it's frustrating for me as a user. It's annoying for developers. It is just, you know, bad mojo on Apple's part, but they've classically operated like this and we put up with it.
Well, what I want to know is what the motivation is for Apple to not do this, because they know that it's something that is needed. They see the problems that I can't imagine. I mean, being the meticulous,
no, they're not ignorant. They're not ignorant
person that I am. If I were in charge of doing the App Store, I wouldn't want my App Store polluted with a bunch of duplicate applications like Instacast, the old version, and Instacast, the new version, and having that be the situation. I would want it to be a more fluid experience for everybody, developers and for users. There's no reason for them to not do it other than the fact that it requires work.
Yeah, exactly. You hit the nail on the head, Michael, because it requires work and the current system is still working.
But what the hell are they doing otherwise? What are they going to do with iOS 7? That is so much better than providing what consumers know they want. Yeah, Apple's great at providing things that
skeuomorphism and add a fingerprint scanner and a payment system.
Yeah,
done.
No.
And maybe they'll add more information that we can display on a lock screen.
And
people
and
aren't
FYI,
sure that
I
they.
I don't believe they're doing any of those things other than the user interface stuff.
The user interface stuff, sure. But you know what? My mom doesn't care. My grandfather doesn't care. And I don't care that much about the skeuomorphism crap as much as I care about having a better experience in the friggin' App Store. That's why I spent 2 years working on Appler. I mean,
yeah,
it's
but
like,
how long
crazy.
Have we been saying we want a better experience than the Finder? And they haven't addressed that either.
Okay, you're right. Never mind.
That's
never mind.
So there you go.
Never mind. I give you that. The Finder's not that bad, though. I'm okay with the Finder.
Exactly. And iOS isn't that bad, and skeuomorphism's not that bad. And guess what? None of Apple's competitors have figured out jack squat yet, so Apple doesn't have to address any of these things. Again, go back to where the money is. Go back to why are we not going to get an iPad update this spring? Well, guess why? Because there's no competition in iPads, and Apple's selling a gajillion of them, and they would be stupid to bring one out now. Because it's only going to cost them more to make. They'll make less money per unit, and they don't have to put one out because what are people going to go buy?
They're going to go buy their iPad.
They're going to buy an iPad or an iPad mini.
Well, I would like to. Yep. I would just like to point out with the Finder analogy, you can go out and get a bunch of different Finder replacements. You can't get an App Store replacement. As we've been discussing, they're not allowing that anymore.
Well, you can in as a web apps.
Sure. And now I'm very glad that I haven't been working on a native app. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's interesting. The more annoying thing for poor AppGratis is they've been rejected for the same thing before and gone through the whole process of getting Apple to okay it. And it looks like they're just going to keep hitting the same thing again. And it's, they're probably mostly just a victim of, turnover in the app review department.
I hope that's it.
You know, it's like you get some new guys in there and they don't realize that we've already been down this road, and then you got to go through the whole appeals process again and start the whole BS all over again.
The problem, because it goes back to the arbitrary approval.
Yeah.
That's a real problem for developers that use the platform as their business. I mean, their sole source of income.
Well, again, all these classic problems. Where are they going to go? Right.
Right.
Well, they could always just not do phones. They could just use their talents in other ways. If it gets to them, I mean, certainly they could become frustrated enough that they just give up on doing it. Because,
that's my biggest concern. And that's why I really think Apple needs to wake up and address these issues sooner than later. Because this is the opportunity for some competitor to do something. What amazes me even more than Apple not addressing this, is that Google it's not going to be BlackBerry, but Google has not figured out a freaking way to take huge advantage of this. And maybe Microsoft is the sleeping giant in all of this, and they've got plans, although I don't put much faith in that. But if they were smart, they would have a whole team of people secretly going, okay, here is the chink in the armor, and here's the thing that we attack. I mean, we know they've gone after developers in the past, but... you know, if they can give developers a more lucrative model with much better terms and a better experience, I think you could sway people very easily, because I think developers are very much fed up with all this crap.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, Apple has the best marketplace for them to sell what they're creating.
You know, I don't think Microsoft would be able to draw that many developers, because you still have to look at where the money's coming from. Yeah. Microsoft could offer them just a fantastic deal, but if there's no one there, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so it's a two-sided problem. And Apple has the big upper hand on the numbers part. And, you know, so Android would seem like the logical choice, but again, when we get data about what people are doing on Android devices, I don't know what they're doing with them. They're not using apps, they're not buying apps, and they're not surfing the web, so... go figure.
Yeah, so that means developers just go to the App Store. Yep. And they deal with it. And the ones that have good apps make money.
Uh-huh.
And occasionally they get pulled from the App Store and they're like, what the hell?
But, you know, frankly, how much you have to ask yourself, too, at the same time, I didn't know about AppGratis before this week.
Yeah, well, I think I'd seen it a bit, but yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, I really hadn't heard of them, and I've now checked them out. I'm aware of what they do. I'm aware they have an app. So at the same time, getting pulled and getting a lot of controversy also creates a certain amount of advantage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. All right, so you know what? I know how to... Yeah, do you want to know how you can figure out more about... what goes on inside, what really goes on inside Apple, how the most secretive company really works? You could listen to Adam Leshinsky's Inside Apple on Audible, because Audible is our sponsor this week. So if you don't know about Audible, firstly, if you want to take advantage of the deal, we have a great deal that you can't get on the site. If you go there, you can't get this deal unless you actually use the special offer code. And the way you do that is go to audiblepodcast.com/WHC, for We Have Communicators, of course, and they will give you a free audiobook, any audiobook on the site. You can go ahead, use the free credit that you get when you sign up for the Audible listener program, and it's a 30-day program that you have access to. But actually, even if you decide not to renew the thing, you still get the book. So if you don't know what Audible is, honestly, it's the best place. It's the only place, as far as I'm concerned, to find great audiobooks. If there's an audiobook of it, you're going to find it on Audible. They have over 100,000 titles now. They've been around forever. They have mysteries, sci-fi and fantasy, history, fiction, romance, classic books, self-improvement, everything. I mean, I've been a member for many, many years, and I've found many different types of books on here. I mostly listen to fiction, but I've heard self-improvement books on here. I've listened to David Allen's Getting Things Done, you know, because that's one of those books that's like huge and kind of a dry read. And if you can listen to it while you're in the car, hey, that's a lot better, you know. If you don't have a lot of time to sit down and read a book, this is great. So you can listen to it in the gym, you can listen to it in the car. They have a great iPhone and iPad application. You can download the audio files on your computer and burn them to CD or throw them on an iPod, whatever you want to do. I prefer the iPhone application because you can actually access your whole library from the application, whether or not you've downloaded them or not. Find the one that you have kept in your library that you just got, whatever, tap on it, and you can start listening to it within, I don't know, like 30 seconds. I've streamed plenty of audiobooks even over the cellular network. And the great thing about this is whenever you find a book on here, you can actually get a free sample. We can listen to a free sample of this book,
Obsessive
Inside
Focus
Apple.
On Detail. Also on display for the last time was a different breed of CEO, one who exhibited personality traits, narcissism, whimsy, disregard for the feelings of others, that society normally dismisses as negatives.
See, and you can
but
actually
are they?
Get a,
for the
a
way
good
Apple
feel
does
of
business
the,
and
of
the
how
way its
the,
executives
the narrator
the
sounds
company,
and fly in the pace of it. And they, I mean, it's like a 5-minute preview for most of these books. So I think a lot of these books cost, like, yeah, this one is $19 usually. But if you're a member of the Audible program, then you get either one or two credits a month, depending on what your membership is. And it's a totally manageable program. I think it's for one book a month, it's $15, or two books a month, it's $23. But like I said, you get one for free. So if you haven't already tried Audible, if you're listening to this right now, you like podcasts, do you like getting awesome books just kind of thrown into your ears, you don't even have to worry about sitting down and reading it and taking the time to do it, get Audible. It's awesome. I have tons of books. I have tons of books in my collection that I have yet to read. And they let you keep those forever. And I have tons of books in here that I have already listened to that I like to go back to and listen to again, like John Hodgman's The Areas of My Expertise.
Great like book.
It's an awesome book. And at the end, with a lot of these audiobooks, there's special content made just for the audio. So I believe in that book, Areas of My Expertise, there's a list of 700 hobo nicknames.
Yep.
But...
which is awesome.
Which is so awesome.
The best part is the background music.
Yeah, so Jonathan Colton... his buddy actually plays the guitar throughout the like hour long reading of the 700 hobo nicknames, which is hilarious. And the story goes that they actually did that all in one take. So every once in a while, after like 10 or 15 hobo nicknames, you'll hear John Hodgman say one moment, and then he'll go and maybe like take a sip of water and then come back. But Jonathan Colton plays through the entire thing. It's one take. It's really awesome. So there's tons of stuff like that. There's one called Things I've Learned from Women Who've Dumped Me. And it's a collection of stories, and they're actually written. I feel like I just got aphasia. They're read. They're read by the comedians that wrote those stories. So it's awesome. Check it out. audiblepodcast.com/WHC. If you haven't tried Audible at this point, you gotta you got to give it a try. They support the show, so you know what? Give them a try. audiblepodcast.com/WHC. With that, we should probably talk about, I would like to talk about Ron Johnson being fired from JCPenney.
Why?
Well, okay. I would like to say that my experience with going to JCPenney recently, before I went on vacation, I don't usually go to JCPenney, but I've been there enough times that I kind of understand that it's the standard department store thing. But when I went
anymore. They got stores within a store.
It is craziness. It was kind of confusing, honestly. I went there to get some shoes, and it's not like any other place that has shoes, because most places that have shoes, they're on racks, and right below it, you see all the boxes full of the different sizes and styles of that shoe that's up on top. And it's not like that here. The shoes are all spread out and nice that you can check them out. But when you want to get a pair or try on a pair, you actually take the pair to a person who's standing at a counter and say, "Hey, I want to try out these two different pairs," and they bring them out, which is very Apple Store like, because they don't have all the stock out there, but they do have the different models available for you to see.
That's a lot like REI also. That's how they do their footwear department.
Okay. But yeah, so he was fired, and they didn't like the changes.
Because he got rid of coupons. He got rid of discounts or sales or whatever, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Right. Yeah, and just to show how brilliant JCPenney is, they replaced him with the guy they fired when they brought Ron Johnson in.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I guess you could say that it makes a lot of sense, though, that they did
We're
that.
We're just going to go back in time and forget that ever happened.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, we don't want to try something new. We'll go back to what was already sending us down the drain really fast, because at least we're comfortable with that death.
Yeah. It's a very comfy, comfy death. But I guess the most interesting thing for us is the happy notion of, well, maybe not happy, happy for some, of him coming back to Apple.
No.
No.
Not happening.
No.
Not happening or not a good idea?
Not happening.
Both.
Yes, I agree.
The position is open.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be filled with Ron Johnson.
Now, why is that?
All right. So first, you have the whole thing with Ron is the guy that likes to come up with the new way to handle retail experience and to fix whatever's wrong with the current retail experience. He already did that at Apple. And so what is there for him to do now?
Evolve it, possibly. Make it...
No.
No?
No. His job there is done. That's why he left. That's why he chose to leave. His job was done. And so he won't come back, and Apple's not going to offer him his job back, and it won't be an animosity thing. It's just he's not the right fit anymore.
Yeah,
and that's okay.
I mean, except for why am I blanking now? VP of Hardware Engineering. Apple doesn't typically hire people back.
Oh, yeah. The
Historically.
Oh, Bob Mansfeld.
Yeah, Bob.
Thank you.
But he didn't really leave, did he?
Yeah, well, they kind of never let him leave, right? He was going to leave, and then, yeah, exactly.
Right.
But, you know, Apple is not the type of company. I guess the other exception would be Steve Jobs, but he was fired and then, you know, pretty much begged him to come back, I think.
They bought him.
You bought him back. Yeah, exactly.
More dignified.
Smartest thing they ever did. Mm-hmm. but yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are some examples, but it's just not the mode that they work in. Right. Had he stayed there, he could have had a job for forever. But
sure.
Yeah.
He's gone. And that's that.
Hey, Jeff, you might want to restart your Skype because you're cutting out like crazy.
Again?
Yeah.
Oh, holy crap. All right, I'll be right back.
That's okay. it was, I don't know what the issue is with me, but I like to read comments on these types of stories.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite comment, I'll skip all the ones that kind of made me upset, but my favorite comment was the one that said, okay, in addition to bringing back Ron Johnson, they should bring back Avi Tavanian and Bertrand Serlet.
Oh, yeah, let's just bring everybody back while we're at it.
Didn't I thought that Bertrand sort of replaced Avi. Was that not the case?
I don't.
I liked
I'm
both
not
of them.
That big on the corporate history of Apple.
Neither am I.
So, yeah, I don't follow along very, very well.
Are you back, Jeff?
I am. Did I miss anything exciting?
Not terribly.
There were some comments, I guess, made about...
Bringing back Bertrand and Avi.
Ah. All right.
Comments made by crazy posters on Mac Rumors.
Oh, those crazy posters.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the iPhone 5S, because that's fun to talk about things that aren't out yet.
Don't exist.
Yes. So Brian White, Topeka Capital Markets analyst, says the iPhone 5S will launch in at least two, if not three, different sizes. Screen sizes, I should say.
Oh, God.
Hey, you know what?
Why are we even talking about this?
Why?
Yeah.
Is it so we can make fun of him for what's clearly a case of early onset of dementia?
No, you can make fun of me because I'm kind of warming up to the idea of that being the case.
Oh, Michael.
Because what? I think that the idea of bigger phones has completely been legitimized. And at the same time,
by whom? Yeah. Wait a minute.
Bigger by the Android
giant
market.
Bucket of crap.
Support
okay,
it.
Okay, well, the Android people don't count for Apple.
They
sound callous, although I do. Apple's thing has always been, don't give people what they want. Give them what they need.
Okay, all right. Wait. Before you go any further, if you're listening to this show and you would like a bigger screened iPhone, email. We have feedback at wehavecommunicators.com.
Yes, please.
If you want, leave us the reasoning.
Give me actual hard numbers and data, because everything that I've been reading, and I'm not opposed to Apple doing a bigger screen, but I'm really trying to figure out where the justification is. I'm not a big fan, but none of the numbers
phone calls
that I've
something
seen
that looks like an iPad mini held up to my ear.
Well, it doesn't need to be the size of an iPad mini. I personally would like a phone that is the size of like the GS3 or maybe a little bit smaller.
What size is that?
Okay, we get to the GS3. It's no longer truly a one-handed device. From my perspective, and I think it's Apple's perspective as well, a mobile phone needs to be a one-hand device.
I'll tell you that my iPhone 5 barely qualifies, so I don't know
I juggle my iPhone 5.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy that argument. Apple can make it. What I do like is the narrowness, which means that it still fits into my pocket easily. And I think that's more important for me from a usability standpoint. I'm looking at these gigantophones, as I'm now calling them.
I love that gigantophone.
Well, and Ken Ray.
Ken Ray did that, right?
Yeah, that's okay. Ken Ray's term, because he, like us, hates phablet as a term.
No, I can't believe you even said that word.
Sorry.
For 3 minutes, you were dead to me.
the gigantophone, I see people with them. It just looks ridiculous. It looks ridiculous. I understand the niceness of screen real estate. Getting back to this idea that Apple's going to have three different devices, I will buy, Michael, I will give you that maybe they do one size that's larger and wider than the current version. I don't think that they're going to do that, but I could understand that move.
Yeah, I'm not saying, I don't think
that. What I'm saying is totally BS about his report, is they are not going to do three different size devices.
Well,
they're
just
not.
They already do two.
They already do three different size devices.
But you have
the iPhone 5 and the new iPod Touch, the iPad Mini and the iPad.
Yeah, but that's and on the just the smartphone side of things, Michael, that's changing because with the new mandate that all new apps and app updates have to support a 4-inch screen, I'm convinced when we see the iPhone 5 that we are not going to see a phone in Apple's lineup that doesn't have the 4-inch screen.
So you don't think that they're going to continue selling a 3.5-inch screen?
No.
I think that they should.
Not after this summer.
I think that there are people who definitely want a phone that is that size still. They want an iPhone that is that size, I should say.
Which size?
3.5-inch.
They're going to have to buy an old, used iPhone.
Okay. Well,
this
is Apple's leaving those people behind.
This is the way that Apple would have three different screen sizes, though, and it does make sense. I think
it's a nightmare for developers. It's a nightmare for marketing. It's a nightmare for just managing. It's just I don't see them doing it.
I agree.
It doesn't make any sense. Going back to the money and going back to the business. The numbers of people demanding it aren't high enough yet to really justify it.
Okay,
like I said, I could see them going somewhere between a 4-inch and a 5-inch phone and making a larger size one, but beyond and one model of that. But beyond that, I really don't think they're going to do it. And I don't think they needed to do it this year. So I really think it's going to be the same size for this year, for 2013. Apple's sticking with the 4-inch form factor. They're just going to standardize it across the line.
Okay.
That's my gut instinct on it.
Fair enough.
But so what size are you thinking? So you said Galaxy S3. What size is that screen? I don't even know. Is that like a 4.7?
I do not know.
But you want it.
Yeah, I do. Okay. I played with it in the store before I bought my iPhone 5, and I thought, this is really nice. I don't like the Android too much, but I like the big screen.
Yeah, I think that's a sub 5, and that's reasonable. Because I don't buy the argument. But even still, once you start getting toward 5, I don't know that it's necessarily pocketable.
4.8 inch.
You know, to me, that's a big deal.
Yeah. Sure, definitely.
It seems like I'd have to actually try it. I guess I need to grab one. The problem is that when you're at the store, they're always on those stupid security cables.
Yeah.
So you can't really stick it in
your pocket to see if it's going to work like that. So I need to borrow somebody's and just say, hey, can I?
Well, there are certainly people
that
who
might be
have
a little
those
personal.
Giant
hey,
phones.
Can I stuff this in my pocket?
Yeah.
When I played with one from one of my friends, my first thought was, oh, it's not quite as big as I thought. That's really cool. And then I started actually trying to do stuff on it. And it was in my hand for less than 2 minutes before it became a two-handed device.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even like I thought, oh, God, I have to use two hands. It was I realized, oh, I am using two hands. It just became the natural way to use it. It is not a one-handed device.
Yeah.
Now, if you have giant hands, sure, but that's not
me. Well, but again, too, at the same time, though, in my mind, a lot of those kinds of things, depending upon what the application is, if you have smart developers and smart designers and things like that, a lot of the usability things in terms of the screen size can be addressed by good UI design. You know,
yeah.
I'm not saying
yes.
That's going to solve all problems, but I mean, you can overcome a lot of challenges. If you have an app and you're like, I really want this app to be usable as one-handed, you could design your interface in a way where you didn't have to do a lot of reaching, or there were rare instances where you had to resort to that.
Which means that realistically, you will create an interface that's probably right-handed,
right,
and has space on the left side of the screen.
Yeah,
and then Jeff won't be happy.
I mean, I'm not adamantly opposed to the concept or the idea. I just don't see the practicality of it, and I don't see the business reason for it at this point, because I don't know that screen size is one of those specs that most, if you asked most iPhone owners, they would be. But I guess we're going to find out, because we have communicators. Listeners are going to email us.
Yeah, right? Well, I mean, if you ask iPhone owners about screen size, they don't really have a lot to say because they haven't had options.
Well, what they can say is, I like it or I don't like it.
Well, I think that they would like, I'd like my iPhone 5. Don't get me wrong about that. I love it. But I think I would love it even more if my phone was bigger, if it had a larger screen. Not crazy bigger, but 4.8 inch or right in that same ballpark would be great.
And again, I don't rule out Apple doing a larger screen device. I rule out Apple doing three different screen sizes. I think that's gotcha. Just dumb.
I agree.
Okay.
Three screen sizes is not happening.
Okay. Now, what about the idea of them rolling out several colors? Because that's another report.
Nah. I don't think that's going to happen either. I think it's black and white, and that's it.
That's another Brian White quote, by the way.
Well, you know, and they've done that. And, I mean, they've done that in the past. And so there's a history of that. I think the problem every time Apple tries to do that is they end up with inventory problems because they can never predict which colors are going to be the popular sort of hip ones. And so by keeping it simple, keeping it black and white, I think it makes the supply chain, it makes inventorying, it makes, you know, all those sorts of things much simpler. So why
even
bother?
Years, well, more than a couple of years of the two color market under their belt. So yeah, so they have a much better idea what to expect from from buyers.
Well, and a consumer's not going to go, I'm not going to buy an iPhone. They don't have a blue one. Screw them.
yeah, that's true.
Sorry, man, Jeff, I didn't cut you off.
No, you're absolutely right, though.
I cannot wait until we have some real things to talk about.
Like what?
Like something real. When they announce something.
Oh, some actual products, some which will real be in the things. Fall.
Yeah. No, it won't be the fall.
What's coming out before the fall?
Well, we get to talk about WWDC. iOS stuff.
iPhone in the summer, I guess. Yeah, we'll have an iPhone this summer, but we're not having any iPads, which was a little bit disappointing. But I totally understand that.
You don't think we're going to have an iPad?
I mentioned earlier. What?
You don't think we're going to have the iPhone or the iPad 5
in the fall? That's the latest rumors, and when I heard that, I'm like, that makes total sense, because if we haven't had it by now, if Apple hasn't done something by now, because they should be selling them in a couple weeks, and they haven't even announced one, so.
But that's according to previous.
That's
history.
According to previous. Also, releasing a new iPad every 6 months, that doesn't seem like something Apple would do. And they did the iPad mini and then reset the iPad by releasing the fourth gen about, what was it, about 6 months after the iPad third gen iPad came out. Yeah. And so if they did it again, that would be about another 6 months. And that just, I don't think Apple did the fourth gen iPad at the 6 month mark because they wanted to start a new upgrade cycle. I think it's because the components that they really, really wanted to include in the third gen iPad weren't totally there. Plus they needed to switch it to a Lightning connector. So when the iPad mini came out, the components they wanted were available. They could do the Lightning connector, and they were able to go across the board at that point with Lightning connectors for their devices, except for the Shuffle, which it works different anyhow, and the Classic, because they're just not going to change it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so now they're on you know, this fall release cycle for iPads, and I think another reason, two other reasons are, one, I think Gruber or somebody pointed out that, you know, if they don't have the device out now, you've got iOS 7 probably being shown off at WWDC, so you're not going to want to ship a product with iOS 6 and then have iOS 7 come out immediately after. Although they do that, but it's usually like, oh, it's shipping 2 days before iOS 7 drops and you can upgrade. That's not going to happen. And then the other thing is, I really think that they are going to want to put an A7 processor in it, and they're going to want that processor not to have gone through Samsung. So it's going to take them a little while to rejigger that whole supply chain component and get TSMC or whoever else they're going to use to make those chips on board and make sure they're good and solid to go in an iPad. And the fall would give them the time to kind of do that. And then all those other reasons I mentioned earlier, the fact that iPads are still selling well and Apple really doesn't have a lot of competition in the tablet space. They have the luxury of time And I think they're going to take advantage of it.
I think you're right. Oh, by the way, you're not dead to me anymore. It's been way more than 3 minutes.
Oh, awesome.
Hugs.
All right. So do we want to talk about, okay, we got two more on the docket. We have the flexible displays and the other thing. Do you want to talk about the fact that Apple is looking to get someone to work on flexible displays?
Now, I heard this afternoon that that job opening is gone.
It is gone. So maybe they
hired
somebody.
Which tells me they already hired someone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go.
Okay, cool.
You know, that is, it's interesting, I guess, mostly because at several public appearances, when asked about revolutions in computing and personal, like handheld sort of computing or in that sort of size, Steve Jobs mentioned that on several occasions that flexible displays would be something to look forward to.
Yeah. There's tons of potential applications across all kinds of products. So it makes absolute sense that Apple would be wanting to, you know, move in that direction and maintain a lead in that space in terms of their R&D.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost a no-brainer. So it's kind of hard to talk about because it's just like, well, you know, that is going to be something in the future with consumer products. That's yeah. just going to be a thing.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if Apple actually gets into producing that sort of stuff for themselves. They're doing CPUs.
I know. Anything's possible at this point.
Yeah, they have a lot of money. Although they do have that big campus that they've been trying to build.
Yeah, and it's costing them a couple million, a billion
a couple
bucks
billion.
More, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry. And I corrected myself.
At least another year in terms of time, too, which is unfortunate. I want to see that thing.
Yeah, but I don't. It's going to be closed, right?
Oh, you won't be able to go?
Right. It's a closed campus.
Well, I guess the current one's also closed. Right?
Well, you have the little employee store where the company store you can get into.
Yeah, but that's not really the right. campus. That's the, you can go in if you have a buddy who works there. That's what I'm talking about. We've talked to one of our buddies who works there, and they take us into to eat at the cafeteria, which is the only thing you can do if you don't have special clearance. But hey, they have good food there at Cafe Max. If you ever have an opportunity, you should do it. Good stuff, vegan stuff.
Nice.
California court rules anti-texting laws apply to checking maps while driving. And I guess it kind of sucks for me because I always thought, well, yeah, I'm screwing around with my phone in the car, but I'm not texting. I'm doing some other things. And that's what I'll tell the cop when he pulls me over for doing it. I'll tell him I'm not texting. I'm looking for something on Spotify or Google. I'm Googling something.
The only reason why this one is complete BS to me.
Okay.
Well, it's because it only applies to cell phones that have mapping systems on them. But if you have a dedicated GPS, you're fine.
Yeah, that is true.
Someone can explain me the freaking difference. Then
bigger buttons,
I'll buy it.
Bigger text.
They need to ban both if they're going to ban them.
I agree. The logic is government. That's it. Because
yeah,
what's the difference between taking your iPhone and sticking it in the cup holder or having like a little dashboard mount that it goes into, and having a GPS that's either in your dash, sitting in a cup holder, or on a mount that's probably on the windshield obstructing part of your vision.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure because the navigation companies that make the dedicated GPSs also make the same software that goes on the phone, that some very smart lawyer could very easily prove that they're ostensibly the same thing.
Yeah.
And the only bummer in doing that is the ruling will probably go the other way and just end up banning the GPS devices. So,
well, I'm not sure. There are probably plenty of lawmakers who really rely on GPSs.
Yeah, but keep in mind we're talking about California. In California.
You're talking about government and bureaucracy. Yeah. And there's not logical or rational thinking anywhere near any of that.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, at least you can still tell Siri where you want to go. And then if you do need to touch your phone, what do? You fall into rule number one, which is we've already discussed rule number one.
The golden rule, yeah.
Yeah, don't get caught. Look around before you touch your phone. Make sure there aren't any cops. And then you'll be fine.
That's right. When using GPS apps is illegal, only people that want to find where they're supposed to go will be outlaws.
Yeah. I think I got that. You're breaking up again, but I think we'll be
okay. Of course I am, because...
You're talking about bad things.
See, yeah, I'm talking about bad things.
I'm supposed to say nice things about Skype.
Skype is beautiful and wonderful. If it was a girl, I would date it, but in a totally nice way. Yeah. Am I sounding any better yet?
You're actually, a little bit. You get a little better.
Yeah, see? It's totally supporting our theory.
Uh-huh. Okay, so let's get on to our iDevice picks, and I'll give Jeff a little bit more time to think nice thoughts about Skype while Adam goes first.
All right, now I got to remember what I was going to pick. Oh, I'm picking Badlands, which is a cool game. So I always rely on Mike Schramm from, where is he at now? Hopefully I'm not going to get this right. Still at Tua?
I'm not sure.
I believe so.
Okay. Don't want to get that wrong, because he's a gamer guy and he does a lot of iOS game app reviews. And when he says something is cool, I almost always buy it. So he said this game was cool, and it's kind of this funky game. I don't really know what to make of it. It's like a little kind of puzzler kind of game. And you're this little ball of fur with like arms. It's kind of hard to describe, but it's got that real kind of unique look. It reminds me a little bit of
Meatwad from Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
he looks like Meatwad from Teen Hunger Force. No, I was thinking of Goo, World of Goo.
Oh yeah,
kind of has that kind of shadow look to it, with really rich multicolored backgrounds and what have you. And so what you are is you're this little guy, and you have to basically get from one end of each little level to the other, avoiding obstacles. And it's a real simple interface. You put your finger down and he flaps his arms and he goes up and moves forward, and you let go and he goes down. And then, of course, there's different power-ups along the way. So you can get faster, you can get made larger or smaller, so you might get stuck to the point where you can't fit through a space, so you got to avoid the things that make you bigger at certain points and avoid obstacles. And then also there's little clones of you that pop up along the way, and you try and save on various levels as many clones as you have. So I haven't played it too much. I picked it up I think last week, and I played it a little bit, but it's one of those really simple, fun kind of side platformer style games that I'm really enjoying. And it actually has, I'd like to try this, it has a multiplayer mode, so you can do like four players at once on the same screen through multiplayer. And and again, I'm a big fan of anything that's just really beautiful, and it's really beautifully designed, and it's just simple and fun to play. And then, you know, you earn it. It's in some ways like a lot of these other games, where each level is sort of a puzzle in and of itself. And so you'll earn, in this case, I think it's little eggs for, you know, one, two, or three for each level. And you can go back and replay levels, and you just try to advance. And it's called Badland. And I think it was $3.99. So $4, but well worth it. And it's iPad and iPhone. So
yeah, cool.
And it's Mike Schramm approved, so you know it's good.
Yeah, there you go. Jeff, you've been thinking good thoughts about Skype.
I have. I've been thinking about how beautiful Skype is, and okay, how I want to hug it and buy it presents.
All right, so you have a pick for us then.
I do. My pick is Panic's new application. It's called Status Board, and it's for the iPad. And
awesome.
Yeah, it just came out today, and it's amazingly cool. Think of all the information that you probably want to have access to at the same time without having to jump from app to app. Like, you need to see status updates from the social networks you follow. You want to see your most recent emails. You want to see your schedule. You need to know the weather. you want to know what, say, the traffic stats are for your website, and maybe whatever, a bunch of different things like that. That's what Status Board does for you. It's like a whole bunch of little modules that you put together to create the interface that you want to see all the information that you need to see at a glance. And there you go. That's what it is. You can take HTML content and create your own little modules. You can have it build graphs and charts for you on the fly based on data you provide it, like through a CSV file or a JSON. And it can build tables out of HTML data that or information that you're giving to it. So it's very customizable, and it will also display out to HDMI or over AirPlay. So you can take the information that it's collecting for you and put it on a big screen. And the way the Panic guys are using it, they're using it to keep track of all of the development projects they're working on. And so they have a big screen set up in their office where they can all look up and see exactly what's going on with all of the developers and all of the projects they're working on. For people like us, all of the information that we want to have access to throughout the day can be on one screen and presented in a very beautiful way.
Cool.
So it's going to be great for all kinds of like info boards and panels. Like if you're at a conference or something like that, and you want to have status panels, or you're running an event, or I mean, it's just super flexible in terms of what you can do, because it just basically hooks up to any hosted data, like Jeff was saying. So you can use a CSV file as that data. You can use a JSON stream. You can write a web service.
Tumblr. You can see how many people are in space right now.
How many people are in space is one of the modules that Panic wrote. And what's cool, if you write a little module, you can actually send the link to that to somebody else who has the app, and they can install it on their app. So you can write your own custom things and then share them with a work group or something like that. So if you want to get everybody on the same page, you know, like Panic is doing for a project or something like that, you could do that. And I just have a feeling there's going to be a lot of people that are going to develop all kinds of cool custom code and modules that you'll be able to leverage. So.
Yes, I think this is a very strong foundation to build from, and I'm really excited to see what Status Board evolves into.
So how do you build the Status Board modules? Do you do this from the app, or do you do this from your computer with like HTML?
You do it from your computer with HTML, and then you put the file up. So like one example they have is showing how to build a table, like a graph. So if you want to build a graph, they have little PDFs that'll tell you, you know, what you need to do it. So you can basically, you know, in Numbers, build a spreadsheet and then export that as a CSV file and then throw it on your Dropbox, and then just get the Dropbox link, and you plug the Dropbox link into the table object in Status Board, and then it'll just suck in the data, and then it will display it. And then if you want to control the colors and stuff like that, there's some mechanisms for doing that. But, you know, and what kind of chart you want, if you want to I think it's mostly bar charts. I don't know if they have other charts yet. That's all I've seen so far.
Yeah,
I've only
played
with
bar charts. You can do line graphs.
Oh, that's
well.
Right.
Gantt charts. Can you make a Gantt chart?
I'm not sure.
Can you make a triangle graph? Sorry.
Pretty simple at this point.
Okay. I think that's a 30 Rock reference, maybe. Anyway, continue. It looks awesome.
But then it gives you a little grid. Like once you have your widgets on there, it gives you a little grid, and you can resize stuff and you can move it around. And so you can kind of set the interface the way you want it within the application. So it's pretty cool.
Cool. I like it. I like it a lot. So it's called Status Board. It's two words, Status Board, $10. You can get
You're
TV
see this
out.
At a lot of- They have a lot of conferences, I think, as like the info boards that
I
go up.
I certainly hope so. Can you do AirPlay from it?
Yeah, exactly.
I can. Okay, cool.
You can do AirPlay. If you want to do the HDMI out, it's an in-app purchase for another $10.
Okay, I gotcha. That's cool. All right. So that's status board. My pick this week is Mailbox, and I don't think you guys like it, but I like it. It is.
I'm happy for you, Michael.
Okay, thank you. You've probably heard about it. It's a free mail application built for Gmail, and there are some pros and cons. But one of the pros is that it's free, so don't complain too much.
My only complaint is that I have to turn on the all mail IMAP box.
Yeah, and you don't. Gmail. And you have an unwieldy inbox, so that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah. My big complaint is that all of your Gmail email gets copied over and stored on their servers.
Oh, it does. I didn't know that.
Well, actually, I have a lot of complaints, but that's my big complaint.
I wasn't aware of that. Tell me more.
Okay. So for all the extra metadata that that Mailbox gives you, there has to be a way to manage and store that. And Gmail doesn't give you a mechanism to make that happen. What they did was they built their own system, but for it to work, your email has to get duplicated onto their servers. So there's a copy of all of your Gmail email that sits on their servers as well.
Okay, cool. So anyway, I'll talk about why this app is awesome.
Yeah, no,
cool.
I totally
wanted to use it, and I was going to use it up until the point again where it just asked for all mailboxes. And for me, I have a real specific problem in that, you know, that would be just a ton of data, and I use Apple Mail for managing my mail locally, and they don't have a Mac app of this version. It's an iOS app, and so that would just create a lot of storage problems and backup problems for me on my Mac.
Yeah.
That's all.
So, okay. So the primary reasons I like Mailbox is because mail on the iPhone does not really think too highly of Gmail. And by that, I mean you either get the option to delete or archive, and that is in your settings. So if you either get the delete button or you get an archive button, you don't get both. So that annoys the heck out of me. And it doesn't support labels, which isn't a huge deal. I don't use labels that much. But so for a while, I'd use the Gmail application, which is great because it lets you search your actual Gmail, but there's no unified inbox. So this kind of gives me the things that I really want, which is the ability to either archive or delete, and at the same time, it gives me a unified inbox, in addition to some fancy extra features, which are quite cool. So what you get in terms of fancy features are you can have it. So when you go and read an email, the blue dot goes away, but it still counts as stuff that's in your inbox, and that'll still be on your badge. So it pushes you toward inbox zero, which is something that I feel is good for me because I try to push myself toward GTD as much as possible to get stuff out of my inbox because it's my inbox. I'm not doing anything in it. It's not my action list. It's my list of things that I haven't really committed myself to. So I like that feature of it. When you can set up reminders for things. So, for example, when I got my Redbox Instant invite, I wanted to hold on to that for a while before until a particular movie was available for rent in Inbox or in Redbox, I should say. So, because you get those free credits, so I decided, hey, you can tap on it, or you do a special gesture to the left. And it'll say, hey, what do you want this, when do you want us to remind you? And you can say later today or this evening or next week or this weekend or a specific date or someday. I'm not sure about the someday. That seems risky because it's not very specific. I really like the reminder thing about it. And the gestures are pretty fun, although I've had incidents where the way it works is you sort of push the email off to the right. You go really far and it'll delete, and you go like halfway, it'll archive, which is nice. And it's a very nice looking application as well. So it is my current primary email app. if I do use something else, I typically use the Gmail app, but that's only because I need to search for something. So I use this pretty much, but you know, it might not be perfect for you. It's pretty great. I enjoy it right now. Like I said, it's my default app for mail.
A lot of people really like it. I mean, it's nice. Yeah, like I said, I really wanted to use it. It was just this one little hang up. Yeah. So
there are pros and cons, but it's free. So you can go ahead and make up your own mind without having to pay any money.
Do you still have to get in line?
I think you do because it still says it in the description, but I mean, it's been out for a while. Dropbox did purchase it. And so I think they're fulfilling those requests a lot more quickly. So you may or may not have to wait to actually use it. But you know what? If you do, it's probably not going to be very long. And the sooner you sign up, the sooner you just download the application and say, hey, I want to go, the sooner they'll send you a notification saying, hey, you can start using it. But I'm guessing that you can probably download it now and start using it right away.
Cool.
So it's called Mailbox by Orchestra Inc. So yeah, with that, you can find the iPhone picks in the show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. Review the show in iTunes, or you know what? You're a nerdy person, a geeky person. You're listening to this lovely show about communicators and such. You probably have some friends who might enjoy it. Why don't you tell your friends? We'd appreciate that. Because when we have more listeners, we have more incentive to keep doing it, you know? It's good.
Wait, are you thinking about stopping?
No.
Oh, okay, good.
I'm just saying it makes me happy when I see that we're getting new listeners.
Yes, we like new listeners.
Okay.
Yeah.
We also like feedback. So
yeah, you can send that with feedback at wehavecommunicators.com. You can send your audio comments that way. That's the preferred way because it's really easy for me to work with and it sounds really good. You can just do that from your iPhone or your iPod Touch. And
you can call in and just tell Michael he's pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And hang
up. Do that because he needs that.
Yeah. If you want to do that, the hotline, and the very hotline, the super hotline, 202-642-6667. Or you can leave a message for Jeff, too, if you want. Whatever. I'll forward it to him if you have a message for Jeff.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah. Just for you, Jeff. Adam, I guess you have your own phone number.
281-622-4269.
Yeah, there you go. Call Adam. You can find Jeff at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. He's at jgamut on Twitter. Zazzle.com/jgamut is where you can find his Zazzle store with tons of fun things. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Oh, sure. It's always a blast.
And
every
Adam,
single week.
Yeah. Adam Christensen can be found at the MacCast, maccast.com. At MacCast on Twitter and member.maccast.com is the member version of the show.
Yep, absolutely. Just did a couple shows with George Starcher, latest one on VPN, which a lot of people had asked me about. So
cool.
Yeah.
Can I do fancy things with VPN, like you know how I can access my iTunes library through the music application when I'm on my home network? If I set up a VPN, can I do stuff like that?
That's why I had George on. you know, VPN is basically just so you can route your traffic from your hotspot through a secure connection. You know, so if you're at Starbucks, you're going to do a secure tunnel to protect your traffic to make sure if someone's sitting on Starbucks network that they can't sniff what you're doing. They can't look at, you know, the traffic going back and forth. So
cool.
I don't think what you're talking about is more like a proxy kind of thing where you want to basically extend your network from Starbucks to your home network and have it look like one individual network. I'm not a networking guy. So what you are describing is possible to do. I don't know that VPN is the technology that you would do that. It might be part of the technology, but I think you need to do a little bit more. So I think you can set up the VPN to your home network and then you probably need to do some additional routing setup to make sure that all of the traffic, you know, for iTunes is going from there from point to point through that connection. If I'm making any sense.
I should probably listen to that show. That's what you're getting at is I should listen to that show.
That's what the whole show was about. Yeah, a lot of people wanted to know what is it, why do I need it? And we also offered some alternatives. Because a lot of times it's just things like people they don't necessarily want VPN, but they want a secure way to get, you know, files from their home machine, and you can use some other, you know, remote access services for that sort of stuff. So
yeah.
And we talked about rolling your own, you know, using OS X server versus do you want to sign up for a service like GetCloak or something like that. So if you want to know about all that stuff, that episode has that. In the prior episode, I think I mentioned last time, we talked about the OS X keychain. So
yeah, keychain's a handy thing. I like that keychain.
Check it out.
Yep. I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter, at GetAppler on Twitter as well as Appler itself at GetAppler.com, GetAppler. And with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An iPod.
Stupid AT&T.
Getting way better.
It is. It's weird.
Okay, that's really funny. Yeah. As long as I say AT&T is dumb, then oh my god, it's a plot from Skype. They're recording this, and it's going to end up being their new marketing campaign.
And don't say anything bad
Jeff
about
Gamet
Skype
from the Mac Absorber. Yeah. See, they won't even get the name right. They'll say Jeff Gamet from the Mac Absorber thinks that AT&T is bad. Everyone loves Skype.
It's getting worse when you're talking bad about Skype.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Oh, nice things about Skype, bad things about AT&T.
No. Yuck. No. Yuck. No. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck. No. They have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a style.